Welcome everyone to Wise Talk. This is Mariposa's monthly leadership forum. Today we're excited to have Neeraj Dewar. Neeraj is the Professor Emeritus from the Marketing Group at the Ivy Business School in Canada. Neeraj's research focuses on brand equity and brand management issues. He is the author of the book Tilt, Shifting Your Strategy from Products to Customers, and has published papers on brand extension, consumers' use of brand and other signals, as well as international consumer behavior have appeared in the Journal of Marketing, Journal of Marketing Research, HBR, Journal of Consumer Psychology, Marketing Letters, and other outlets. Neeraj teaches PhD, MBA, and undergraduate courses in marketing management and brand management, as well as in the executive education programs. Prior to joining the Ivy Business School, he was associate professor of marketing at INSEAD in France. You can see and read about Neeraj on his Twitter account, and this is at NIRAJDAWAR. All right, so thank you so much for being with us today, Neeraj. I appreciate it so much.
My pleasure, Sue. Good morning to you.
Yeah, and you're coming from Toronto today. It's where you, I assume, live. That's where the Ivy School is. Awesome. I always start out with the same question. I've done this now for about 15 years, and I always ask people about their journey and how they began their career in this field, particularly in the AI space, because what I read is not is your bio, but it really isn't the story. So if you could talk a little bit about how you came into particularly the AI space, and we're going to be talking about that, the recent writings you've been doing. And just before we started, you started to talk about the book that you read, for example, you wrote in 2013, and how things have changed since then, and at the same time haven't. So maybe you could start with that. You could talk a little bit about your journey.
Thanks. Well, for 30 years, so I've studied the interactions between consumers and business, and I've examined how businesses reduce the customers' costs and risks of buying from them, of consuming their product, and so on. And one strategy that has been popular is brands. Brands reduce both the consumer's risk of purchase. You know, they risk not purchasing, or they reduce the risk of purchasing the wrong product, for example.
Right.
And they reduce the cost of purchasing and repurchasing, in the sense that once a brand becomes recognizable, it becomes a shortcut for a whole series of benefits that the consumer is seeking. So that's how, you know, traditionally that's one mechanism by which companies have reduced the the consumer's costs and risks of interacting with them. And my book, Tilt, Shifting Your Strategy from Products to Customers, published by the Harvard Business Review Press, offered strategies for companies, including brands, but other strategies too, on ways they can reduce customers' costs and risks. And then with the advent of artificial intelligence platforms, they change a number of things about those interactions. So it's fascinating to watch consumer adoption of AI platforms skyrocket as they realize that they offer a tremendous amount of convenience and the reduction in the costs and risks of interacting with the world, particularly with marketplaces and companies.
Right. So I also say that, as you know, we've spent this year talking about AI and how AI affects society, culture, business, obviously. And so we thought having you on to talk about markets, particularly brands, would be interesting. And because we do this every day. I mean, way before AI became in vogue, I mean, Google was using algorithms, you know, has been using algorithms for 20 years.
Yeah.
And so we forget sometimes, you know, that like AI's been with us for a long time. We just didn't really call it that. So talk with us a little bit about, let's just kind of set the frame here, about how, we don't want a huge history lesson, but maybe a couple things around, you know, how AI has sort of infiltrated the marketing space and really it's societal, because I mean we get hit every time we go to the internet, we're seeing something, that's an advertisement, or either subtly or not subtly. So talk to us a little bit about how it shifted.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Algorithms have been around for a long time. Even learning algorithms, algorithms that update themselves based on data and reprogram their strategies for interacting with consumers. Those, too, have been around for a couple of decades now. So I think the big change here is that AI is now in consumers' hands. And you have, you know, it's almost as though the advice to you know, marketers is, when they try to use their algorithms or machines to speak with consumers, the consumers are going to turn around and say, have your machines talk to my machines. It's almost as though there's now a parity of power on both sides. Mm-hmm. And so those interactions, many of the onerous aspects of those interactions can be handed over to the AI. And you know, in particular, what I'm seeing is there are two broad areas in which the consumer is benefiting from having the AI in their hands. The first is that the AI is able to understand and recognize and pick up on the routine, regular, frequently made purchases that the consumer engages in. So, you know, there's probably about 200 to 500 products that any household purchases on a regular basis, everything from light bulbs to garbage bags to coffee to laundry detergents and so on. So when you know, the consumer now has to spend in the traditional model, a fair amount of time managing the inventory for these products, understanding whether they have them or not. When they run out of the product, there's a cost to that, which is you might be without a light bulb for a day or two until it's replenished. And those kinds of inconveniences and costs of managing the inventory, making sure that you put stuff on the list when you go grocery shopping, making sure you pick the right brand or the product when you're in the store, bring it back, all of that is a very high cost to the consumer. And, you know, we as companies, we don't realize how much
the time it takes. That's why Amazon is great. It's like you push a button.
Exactly. So we're making it so onerous for consumers to purchase and consume our products. So when you look at it from that perspective, the fact that the consumer now has the AI in their hand is fantastic, because it allows them to automate all of these routine purchases. But there's
okay,
a
so
flip side
way.
To it, too.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. This is one big sort of change in consumer behavior and how they interact with consumers.
Sure.
They can use the AI to automate what is regular and frequent and repetitive and so on.
Right.
The other big way, and we'll come back to this, but the other big way in which the interactions change is that the AI reduces complexity for the consumer. So there's a tremendous amount of marketplace complexity that the consumer is faced with. And sometimes that complexity is just, you know, it's on in the market because companies are trying to address hundreds of different segments of consumers, and so they develop hundreds of different variants of their products. One example is your cell phone plan. You know, most people don't even know if they're on the right cell phone plan.
It changes every day. I think we try to call every 6 months because it changes so much.
Right. And so imagine having an AI that understands, has studied your past calling patterns, and is able to monitor the marketplace for any new offers or any new plans that might appear that would more efficiently allow you to make the calls and use the data that you use, right?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
So if you don't have to do that monitoring, and basically the AI takes all of the complexity of the marketplace and reduces it for you and says, well, you know what, here's the two or three choices that make sense given your patterns of consumption, given your preferences. And the same could apply for things like insurance products or investment products or anything that is complex. And so the AI is tremendous in terms of being able to offer these two types of benefits. One is the, you know, it automates stuff that is routine and regular.
Right.
And two,
right.
it reduces complexity for products that are difficult, that are complex.
And that's, is part of that complexity? Sorry, real quickly. Is part of that complexity,
no,
like just the idea of just there's so many choices? I mean, I think that's part of what's going on. It's like there's so many damn choices.
Exactly. Yeah. There's so many choices, and each, I mean, if you were to sit down and compare all of the features of all of the phone plans out there, how long would that take you? You know?
My God.
And so it's almost necessary now in today's environment to have a software tool that will allow you to navigate the complex marketplaces we've created. And so the emergence of AI at the right time is good for consumers. Now there's a flip side. There's several flip sides to this, but one of the flip sides for brands is an important one. So historically, you know, companies selling brands have relied on the fact that consumers will become loyal to the brand, and they become loyal to the brand because the brand becomes, you know, it becomes trustworthy. It delivers on the promises it makes.
Yep.
And it delivers repetitively on the promises that it makes. So, it, you know, Tide washes whiter, and sure enough, it washes whiter every time. And so those kinds of promises that are made in advertising are then lived up to in product experience. And that process makes brands trustworthy. And so consumers start to rely on brands. They become loyal to brands. And as marketers, we see that as a very valuable thing, to have brand loyalty among large numbers of consumers.
Right.
But what happens is with an AI, so let's imagine the AI now performs the task of purchasing laundry detergent. It compares all of the ingredients of all of the laundry detergents that are out there, and it convinces, it is convinced that a brand other than Tide does just as well, and is, let's say, 20% cheaper. And
yeah, well,
so it proposes that brand...
The cheap, the price, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so it proposes, you know, it'll do the analysis of the features. It'll go out even and read all of the reviews that are out on the web about the product that you're about to purchase. And knowing your past purchases and preferences and criteria, it will assess the past reviews against your criteria. It will even filter down and look only at consumers that are in some way similar to you. They have
right.
past purchases that are similar to yours. They're in the same age bracket or demographic bracket. They live in the same geography and have historically had the same kinds of interests. Now, if you can actually get the AI to limit its assessment of reviews down to consumers who are similar to you. And so once you start to, you know, be able to parse the data, that the enormous amount of data that is out there in this way, and the AI starts to make recommendations about laundry detergent that you find pretty good. In fact, just as good as when you were relying on the brand. So now what happens is that suddenly over time you'll start to realize that the AI is trustworthy, perhaps even more trustworthy than the brand. And so then the question becomes, do you need brands at all? Will
right.
the consumer simply rely on the AI to sift through the huge amount of information that is in the marketplace to come up with the right choices for the consumer? And once the AI starts to do that effectively, the consumer shifts their loyalty from the brand to the AI. And when that happens, that's a very different world for brands. You know, historically, brands have spent huge amounts of money building that loyalty, and they've spent a huge amount of money reminding consumers to go and purchase their brands on their next shopping trip. If we would just take the top six food companies in the world, Nestle, Danone, you know, Mondelez, and so on. If you take the top six food companies in the world, they together spend about $40 to $45 billion a year reminding consumers to buy their brands. So if the AI is now making those decisions about routine purchases, and if the AI is reordering the product, monitoring inventory, making the product comparisons, looking at reviews, picking out the right product, then all that $45 billion that we were spending advertising to consumers is no longer necessary. We should perhaps be redirecting it. To targeting the algorithm. And so the question will then become, how do we market to the algorithm?
So does that mean, if I'm going to make some extrapolations here, does that mean that price is king, queen? I mean, it really, in some respects, even for luxury brands sometimes, I'm just trying to think here, like I'm thinking about like United, like my affinity with airlines and how I will pay more for my United because I have status. Okay, I mean, I will pay, I know I'm paying more, but I get status in terms of the seats I want, companion, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But if I could use AI to find the best price and have the status on any other airline, I would do it, right?
Absolutely. So all other things being equal, yes, price will matter and will make the difference between choice A and choice B.
Exactly. So in your estimation, this is awesome, fascinating. So are you calling these? So I know that you've got some language around AI assistant space. Tell us a little bit about that and how that relates to what you're talking about.
So I think consumers are relying on these AI assistant platforms, and so it's important to understand, I guess, the consumer's use of the platform. The companies use, so the company that owns these platforms or a platform, for example, Google or Amazon, Google owns Google Home and Google Assistant, and Amazon owns Alexa. So when you start to look at the companies that own these platforms, it's important to understand their perspective too and understand what role they play in the marketplace as consumers begin to shift their purchases to these platforms. And as these platforms start to become the consumer's primary interface to the market and perhaps even to the world. And so if these AI platforms start to benefit the consumer by automating what is regular and simplifying complexity for things that are complex, then the AI platform companies accumulate a large amount of data about these consumers over time, which is why you start to see, we're starting to see an absolute stampede by some of these companies to get their products into the house, even though the products right now are very early generations and not always very good. They often misunderstand the consumer, but it's important to get into the household, start to get consumers to use these products, to use the platforms, so that you start to accumulate data about the consumer. And once
that data
starts to accumulate, it's about the data, and once you start to accumulate large amounts of information about the consumer, then your ability to serve that consumer improves dramatically because you know over time what their preferences are. You know that if they're going to purchase a car, they want it to be fuel efficient and green rather than powerful. If they're going to purchase an investment, they're much more short-term oriented than they are long-term. So you start to recognize these patterns, or at least the AI platform begins to record these patterns over time, and that then allows the AI to serve up choices that are much more focused and much better for the consumer, much more aligned with the consumer's criteria of purchase. And so when that happens, the AI becomes better and better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you want to be
learning.
In early.
Learning.
Absolutely. It's learning. And so that's why you want to be in the household early and get the consumers using your platform early, because you want that learning to happen. Why? Because 5 years down the line, then it becomes very difficult for the consumer to switch from one platform to another unless the entire 5 years of data is portable to the other platform. So,
well, I would assume that Google and Amazon aren't going to allow that.
Aren't going to allow that, right? Unless it is regulated and mandated by some sort of regulation, they're not going to allow the portability of data. And so because the data are unlikely to be portable, the consumer is going to be loyal to one brand of AI, because if they switch, they'll suddenly realize that the recommendations and choices that the new AI is making are just not as good because the new AI does not have accumulated data.
Okay, so let's, 5 years
of data.
This is fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's step back a little bit here. So of those AI platforms that are out there right now, there's Google Home, there's Amazon Alexa. So who else is doing this stuff?
Well, there's obviously the usual suspects. There's Amazon, Google, Baidu, Alibaba, Microsoft, Samsung, and about a half a dozen others at this stage. We have to recognize that building an AI platform is a huge, huge investment. And so it's not everybody's going to be doing it. And at the same time, there's a natural constraint to how many platforms the consumer wants to interact with. The fewer, the better. So the consumer wants a one-stop kind of shop. So they don't want a separate interface for Uber and a separate interface for Expedia and a separate interface for their groceries and a separate interface for their bank. They want one interface. So there's that constraint too, which is the consumer wants to deal with one AI.
Right. Well, I was going to say, so for example, let's play this out a little bit. I don't have an assist yet. Of course, my 13-year-old wants one, and I'm like, no, we can't. We cannot. It's like, there's too many devices in this house already. But I'm imagining that if I had one, I would say, Alexa, please call Uber for me right now.
Yes.
So at some point, and I'm not sure if Uber is with Alexa yet, but it seems to me that all the consumer brands are going to have to are jumping on and probably. I mean, let me ask you this: is an Uber going to be agnostic, and so they're going to want to be on both or on all of them, or are they going to have to say, oh, I want to, I'm going to make a deal with you, Amazon, or Alexa, to only be with you?
Yeah. So I think that choice is very much like the choice of apps today. Should they be only on Android, or should they be on Android and iOS? And so it's a similar sort of what is going to happen over time is that these AI platforms will carve out positions of their own in the marketplace and therefore target a certain type of customer. And, just like iOS versus Android. And so you have to be present on that platform if you want to reach that kind of consumer. So you're absolutely right in terms of making the distinction between vertical apps, which are like skills, like Expedia and Uber and your bank and so on, and then horizontal ones like Alexa and Google Home.
Okay. So my belief about AI is that I don't think I don't think the robots are coming and taking over. I think that the robots are going to make life easier for us, as you've explained, and from the consumer perspective, so we can sift through these products, and calendaring, for example, could be much easier, and that it's not taking away jobs or taking away something from other people. It's going to actually just make it more efficient, so that we can do other things.
So once again, I look at this through the lens of the interactions between companies and consumers, and from that lens, the question really is efficiency. Can we make those interactions less costly and less risky for consumers? And clearly the AI does that. It really does reduce the onerous tasks that we have imposed on the consumer over time to get the consumer to, you know, monitor their inventory, to go prepare shopping lists, to go grocery shopping, walk through the aisles and fill out their shopping cart, to go through a checkout, to bring the haul the groceries back to the car and then back home. And you know, the whole process is very, very expensive for the consumer. And you expect the consumer to do that at least once a week, which is huge. So the fact that the AI, of course, you know, linked with all sorts of fulfillment and delivery systems, can reduce the customer's costs of buying. And you know, if the consumer can have the laundry detergent and their light bulbs and their garbage bags and so on arrive at the door, and you know, it's almost like water and electricity and video streaming services that arrive into the house as and when you need them. So they're on tap, if you will. And so that changes the costs of delivering consumer products to households. That's a big change. So from an efficiency perspective, clearly there are benefits. From the consumer's perspective, the benefits that we've talked about are simplification of complexity, automation of monotony. And so those are very, very important benefits. The flip side, of course, is that the consumer now has to rely on an AI and share data with that AI that over time becomes very, very insightful about what the consumer wants, what their preferences are, and so on. Remember, I mean, there's a privacy issue that is an order of magnitude different with AI than it is with regular data. And that is that traditionally, you know, if you look back, let's say 100 years ago, privacy meant your behavior, your actual physical self. And you wanted privacy for the physical self. Then, with the advent of data, privacy, you know, as our behavior, as our clicks, as our purchases, as our transactions were recorded and formed into databases, those data became separate from the individual. And now the data themselves could be traded, and it could be bought and sold, and it could be. Yeah, and so now suddenly there was a privacy issue that was not embodied in the individual. It was independent of the individual, but it was, you know, just as important, and just a violation of that privacy was just as bad. And so now we're moving to an era where it's not just data about past purchases or behavior that is recorded and transacted. There is an entity separate from the individual that is able to make the same decisions as this individual, as the consumer. And that gives rise to a whole new set of privacy issues where you have a thinking engine which replicates the choices that the consumer would make. And that thinking engine is now transferable. It is movable. It can be bought and sold. And so that becomes a very big privacy issue in my mind.
Oh my gosh, it totally does. Yeah, this is a whole new world. Interesting. So we've been talking about the consumer here. Let's talk about the companies that you had mentioned, which I is probably the most fascinating thing you said, and I don't want it to be missed here. You said a lot of good things, a lot of fascinating things, but this one I think is really interesting in that $45 billion on brand reminding, or, you know, brand awareness, brand of reminding, you know, trying to continue to get the consumer to be trustworthy, that kind of thing.
And to go into the store and buy their brands.
Yeah. So that's going to shift, it sounds like. And I'm thinking even like the shift in the marketing in the last, let's say 5 years. I mean, we did a lot of work at Pinterest, for example, and I just remember, you know, how brands have been able, let's call the companies, have had to shift on for social media. I mean, it took them, you know, 5-8 years to do that, to say, all right, well, we got to start advertising on social media, and whether it's Pinterest or Twitter or, of course, Instagram now. I mean, Instagram is like, you know, is advertising every other picture practically. So now we need to shift to something else, and that's a huge shift. So how do companies, when you're consulting with people, how do you get the marketing, the CMOs, I would say the CMO and the CIO and the CSO, the strategy, for, it's got to be strategic.
Yeah.
How do you talk to them about this, you know, in terms of shifting
back
the way they're looking at this?
15 years ago in 2004, I wrote an article for the Sloan Management Review, MIT Sloan Management Review, on what are brands good for. And the premise of the article was that historically we've used brands as a mechanism to drive consumer behavior. And, you know, given that consumers are loyal to the brand, we then are able to use that to get them to repurchase, to get them to buy more and to buy higher margin products, for example. And so that is those are all processes that marketers are well accustomed to and well aware of. But what happens when data does all of those things and does it better than brands do? When that happens, you know, the brands no longer matter, or do they? And so the question is, this question about the artificial intelligence replacing brands in some way, that question was also a question that I was asking about data. Back in 2004, data could be used, and, you know, if you understood consumer purchases well enough and through analytics, were able to predict which products the consumer is going to buy next, did you really need brands? And so that question has been around for a while. And from the company's perspective, that, you know, the $45 billion that these top six food companies are spending is just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much money here at stake, which we have to sit back and ask. You know, we have to look, step back from the fray and trying to influence consumer behavior this quarter, so in order to meet targets, to ask ourselves, how much of this spend is actually delivering the kind of consumer behavior that we're looking for? And how will technology, how will artificial intelligence change our ability to influence that consumer behavior? So those questions have become more relevant today than ever before. And you're absolutely right in that if you look within the organization, There needs to be a recognition of this, not just from the marketing folks. And, you know, it's already difficult enough to convince the marketing folks that the way they've been doing things is not the way they should be doing things in the future. But also, as you said, the CIO, the CFO, all of them have very different takes on this shift in the marketplace from influencing consumers through brands versus influencing them through data and through AI.
So how do you, it's pretty fascinating, how do you go about trying to help, let's say, a CFO, CEO, and it doesn't really matter, the C-suite, beyond the marketing people, how do you help them understand how this is going to shift? Like, it already is shifting, so what would be like the first step to be helping them understand how it affects, and also it's not just consumer brands, I mean it's services, it's
absolutely,
you know, it's I think insurance is like a big one.
I think once the light bulb goes off, it's not that difficult to convince the C-suite that things will need to be done differently in the future. The difficult part is the next step, which is, what does it mean to market to the algorithm? What does it mean to market to the AI platform? And that becomes a very difficult question, because marketers have have no inkling of how to market to the algorithm. They've been marketing to the consumer. All of their market research data, all of their understanding of the marketplace is about the consumer. In fact,
right.
Historically, brands that have marketed to consumers have made it a point of pride to understand the consumer better than, say, retailers do. And that's what allows them to, you know, capture better shelf space, convince the retailer that they know what the consumer wants, invest in innovation so that they're developing products that consumers actually want to buy and so on. So all of that has been sort of the raison d'etre for these branded goods companies, is that we understand the consumer better than any other player in the marketplace, and particularly better than the retailers, who have weekly contact with the consumer, but that weekly contact is in the role of a shopper rather than a consumer. And these branded goods companies argue that they understand the consumer as a consumer. Now, that role becomes much, you know, that argument becomes shaky once the AI platform understands the consumer better than anybody else. Once the data coming through the AI platform is what is the key to consumer behavior, both to understanding consumers and to influencing consumer choices. And when, you know, when Amazon owns that data, they will extract the rent for access to that data.
Well, and also,
No, it's just a question of power shift. Historically,
well, it is power shift, and Amazon has a ton of power because not only, I mean, they're kind of a little different from Google. I mean, Google's going to potentially gain ground because what they're suggesting from their platform, that they could get monies from that the consumer buying that, because they're gonna in a search. But essentially, but Amazon is gonna get because all the stuff that they would buy is on Amazon. Okay, it's not on Google. It's on Amazon.
Yeah.
So they stand to benefit. So this gets to be a little bit tricky as far as like objective is the AI? I mean, you would think that the AI is objective. However, nothing's really objective. So
No,
that
becomes, you know,
really weird. I think really concerning,
yes.
because Amazon is gonna. I mean, are they gonna put their slant on it and say, okay, is the AI gonna be programmed to learn to put the slant on? Oh well, here, go take this. Let me give an example. That's a scary example. Oh well, it's gonna slant toward you buying this product. Well, what if Amazon doesn't carry the product? So then, therefore, would it then say, oh, well, no, we're not going to have you do that. We're going to have you go over here and buy this product because Amazon carries it.
Yeah. But the kicker is that the fastest growing private label in the world across product categories is the Amazon brand, or Amazon's
right.
private label brands.
Right.
And given that they will then be competing with brands that are sold through Amazon too and on the same platform, but Amazon has access to all of this data about the consumer, that makes Amazon very powerful.
Well, it's sort of like, like thinking like Netflix. Netflix has the Netflix, you know, oriented or article movies, and then it's got it's what it does.
Yes.
That aren't Netflix.
It's only,
or similar.
That's right.
Well, so let's extend that. So given what I just said about the AI is trying to suggest a product, isn't Alexa going to suggest an Amazon product more than they're going to suggest a third party? Actually, it's not even third party. It's like it's sold through Amazon. Then they also have the third party brands that aren't sold through the Amazon. Then they have that. I guess there's four categories: Amazon brand, what's already on the platform of Amazon, the third party that you have to use, they don't ship for you, and then second, then the fourth one would be like they don't have the product, which they have most products, so I guess that might be hard. So is it your understanding that Amazon would say they're going to direct people to the Amazon products?
Well, that's exactly what retailers today do. When you walk into the store and there's the branded good product and there's a private label,
right,
and there's a shelf talker that says compare. Compare the branded product with the private label and
Walgreens.
So that happens all the time already. And so the electronic version of that, or the online store version of that, is already in place too. Recommended product. At the extreme, at the very extreme, you could make the argument that Amazon does not need the brands, and that consumers will buy only Amazon products. Right? That's a very extreme version of that argument. And so, another way to ask that is, why? You know, what purpose do brands serve on Amazon? So that's a question that brands should be asking themselves. What is our role on Amazon?
Yeah. Interesting. Wow, this is fascinating stuff. We'll go back to the consumer now. What do you suggest to consumers, like those of us sitting here in Silicon Valley, have access to all these platforms, and we all have access to them, but we're especially more, I think,
attuned to them.
I get tuned to them, and you know, it's more in our face, I guess. And let me also say that, you know, Amazon is a client of ours, so I mean, I'm high on Amazon, so I'm not trying to do anything but look at different things here in terms of what's possible. I'm wondering from the consumer's perspective, what are the things we should look for in looking at an assist and how believable, I mean, is it? Should we believe it? I mean, should we question it? How do we decide on that stuff?
Yeah. So I think right now it's early enough to be able to ask questions such as what is likely to happen. What are the kinds of power shifts that will happen in this industry? Will the consumer gain power or lose power because they're now armed with an AI? Will retailers gain power or lose power? Will online retailers gain power or lose power? Will branded goods manufacture? And so those types of questions can already start to be asked. And they do have implications for us as a society, which is, do we want to already start to think about things like data portability across platforms so that platforms don't have a monopoly on consumers? And those types of questions should already be asked because we can start to address them. It is early enough to start to address them. But unfortunately, I think what will happen is we'll wait 10 years until the platforms are well entrenched, realize what we've gotten ourselves into, and then start to ask questions.
Makes sense. Well, this has been fascinating. Thank you so much. I totally appreciate it. And again, you can get a hold of Niraj. It's at NIRAJDAWAR on Twitter. And you don't have a website, correct?
No.
Okay, great. So this is the best way to get a hold of you. Thank you so much for being with us today. And I will be in contact myself because this is fascinating stuff. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
A real pleasure, Sue. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye now.
Take care. Bye-bye.